This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents Heretic Spellblade, Book 1 of Heretic Spellblade, written by Katie Robertson, performed by Stephanie Savannah. Chapter 1. The last day of the world arrived with little warning. A scouting report sat unread in an office. The lights were off, and moonlight shined through the window. If somebody scanned the report, he'd learn about unusually powerful activity in the nearby demonic portal. The owner of the office, Nathan Martell, stumbled in and fumbled with the light switch. Two wrought iron lamps flickered to life as magic ran into the lighting elements within them. Nathan scanned the room for a few moments. His dark blue officer's jacket hung off his shoulders, and his shirt buttons were undone. Given his unkempt black hair, it seemed unlikely he was here for work. His eyes fell on the report. He picked it up, flicked through it, then frowned. He hesitated, going over it once more. Almost a minute passed in silence while he considered what he had read. Then he snapped the report shut, dropped it on his desk, and turned off the lights. The report could be dealt with in the morning. He had an alluring subordinate waiting for him in his bedroom. Light crept into Nathan's bedroom at dawn. He was already awake. He remained under the silk sheets of his bed as the sun's rays crept over his face. His eyes were wide open, and he stared at the black hair of the woman sharing his bed. A bushy black tail lay wrapped around his body as he spooned her, and her tufted black cat ears twitched every few seconds as she dreamed. Nathan absently rubbed her belly while they spooned. His mind was elsewhere. He glanced at the ticking clock on the wall. The ornate golden hands had moved by at least an hour since he last looked. Licking his lips, Nathan realized he needed to get up. The bed was alluring, but work needed doing. He rolled out of bed, and the woman stirred. She tossed the sheets aside as she blindly groped for him, her eyes still closed.
"Nathan," she moaned, "come back to bed."
"Go back to sleep, Euphala," he said. She opened her eyes and pouted at him. Her arms reached for him, palms out and welcoming. He kept his expression still, but found it difficult. She knew his weaknesses. Every muscle in his body called him back to bed.
"You know you want to," she sang. "Come on. This is the first time I've had you to myself all week."
"Go back to sleep," he repeated. "I'll join you once I finish something I should have dealt with last night. It's probably nothing." She blinked at him and lowered her arms. Her brow furrowed as Nathan retreated into the adjoining bathroom. The rhythmic pulsing of hot water on Nathan's back allowed him to focus his thoughts. Something about that scouting report was off. He was no stranger to stopping demonic invasions, but he couldn't put his finger on what was wrong with this report. Little things jumped out in his mind that didn't add up. Handling this was Nathan's duty. He was the bastion of the Far Reaches and the commander of this frontier fortress. As bastion, he had special magic to suppress demonic portals and destroy their armies. And only bastions could create champions, who were magical warriors with the power to destroy entire armies of demons single-handedly. Nathan turned the shower off with the brass taps and dried himself off. A clean and neatly pressed uniform lay in a basket near the door. He smiled at the sight. For years, he had refused to accept any servants, but somehow his subordinates kept sneaking in and doing pointless things like this. This morning, it saved him the trouble of putting together his own uniform and appearing ragged. Given the choice, he would have chosen to appear ragged rather than waste any more time. Every passing minute weighed on him. The voice of experience warned Nathan that he had made a grave mistake last night. Euphala stared at him when he stepped out into his bedroom in full uniform.
She was curled up around his pillow, her tail pressed against her face, and ears flat against her head. "This isn't probably nothing, is it?" she asked.
Nathan frowned. "Probably means that it may also be something."
"Don't be coy," she said.
She sat on the edge of the bed and glared at him. Her tail swished back and forth along the sheets and sometimes brushed her curvy thighs. Her large bust bounced with her movements, drawing his eye to the three glittering amethysts inset directly into her collarbone. Those gems marked her as one of Nathan's most powerful champions. Nathan sighed. "I need to follow up on a scouting report I saw late last night. Something about it doesn't sit right with me."
"A scouting report?" Yefela repeated.
Her eyes narrowed.
"This is about the portal, isn't it?"
"Could it be about anything else?"
"It could be a war," she trailed off, her lips thinning.
"Against who? Falmir is the last nation left on Domar."
Nathan laughed bitterly.
"I'm hoping it's nothing, but..."
"If you're this torn up over a scouting report, then it's not nothing," Yefela said.
She stood.
"I've only been with you for a few years, but I know your reputation. Something is very wrong."
Nathan appreciated the ego stroking.
"Give me a minute to clean up and I'll join you," she said.
He held up a hand. "No, I'll go now." She blinked and her tail froze. It resumed its movement a moment later. "I need you to gather Narime and Vala," he said.
A pause. "You think you'll need all three of us?" she asked, running her hand over the three gems in her collarbone.
"If it's as bad as I suspect, I'd rather be safe than sorry."
Yefela looked away for a moment, then back. "Right. I'll clean up, then get the other Tri-Gem champions. Should I let anyone else know?"
"Not yet. Once we know more, I'll let the three of you take charge," he said.
Before he could take a step toward the door, Yefela intercepted him. Her arms and bushy tail coiled around him. She pulled his head down and crushed her lips against his. He reciprocated instinctively, his tongue slipping inside her mouth and eliciting a moan from her. When she pulled away, she had a grin on her face. "I'll see you in a little bit," she said impishly. Nathan left his bedroom. The halls were dimly lit. Only one out of every three lamps were on, a measure to save magical energy when nobody was around. The moment he stepped into the hall, every lamp lit up as motion-detecting magic sensed his movement.
"Bastion, good morning,"
a woman greeted Nathan. She stood next to the door in full plate armor, a longsword at her side and a tower shield strapped to her back.
"How long have you been standing guard, Kiana?" Nathan responded.
He glanced around the hall. Had she been standing perfectly still? He couldn't imagine how else she had avoided activating the lights. Kiana was a curious woman. Only slightly younger than Nathan, she had served as a champion under several bastions until he finally recruited her. She had platinum blonde hair and a fine silken horse's tail. A pair of diamonds shined from within the gorget of her armor. A single iridescent horn protruded from her forehead, parting her platinum bangs and marking her as one of the rarest of the beastkin, a unicorn beastkin. Neither Kiana nor Yefela were human, like Nathan was. They were beastkin, a race of humanoids with animal-like features, such as ears and tails. Their appearance varied significantly based on the region their race originally came from. Many beastkin races had been lost to history over the centuries. Kiana's race of unicorns were so close to extinction that Nathan had never seen another in his 30-plus years.
"Sen and I changed shifts 4 hours ago. Sunstorm was to guard you during the day, but it appears you have work to do early in the morning," Kiana said. "The scouting team..."
"I saw their report last night. I'm heading to the monitoring station now," Nathan interrupted.
Kiana followed behind Nathan as he walked through the empty stone hallways.
The fortress was sprawling, but Falmir had long stopped supplying enough soldiers and staff to keep the place full. Nathan's power as bastion kept the fortress running, regardless of how many people were present. A half dozen men and women sat at glowing desks in the monitoring station. Holographic charts and figures hovered above the occupied desks. Another 20 or so desks were unoccupied and unlit. The far wall was lit up with more charts and figures and formed a central monitor for Nathan and everybody in the room to use as an overview. A pair of statues stood in the far corners, depicting the Watcher Omria, the only goddess of the world. Nathan froze as he entered the room, his eyes running over the central display. Kiana's hand closed around his arm. She looked up at him in concern. "Bastion, you're here early," an analyst said, noticing Nathan's arrival. Have you confirmed the scouting report?" Nathan interrupted. He strode forward into the center of the room. Everybody stopped what they were doing and looked at him. Looking around at their faces, he realized they didn't understand what they had given him last night or what they were looking at. "Well, all night we've been," the lead analyst began to say, but stopped when Nathan looked at her. She gulped. "No, sir. None of our readings match what the scouts reported about the portal. Monitoring devices installed next to the portal, scanners in the walls, and even the ley line activity readings built into the fortress are all at normal levels. The sorcerers can't detect anything out of the ordinary either." Nathan nodded slowly.
"You've recalibrated everything?"
The lead analyst paused and looked to her subordinates. They nodded.
"Yes, sir. At least what we can. We don't doubt the scouts, but..."
"Do the calibration again. Tell Captain Murtis to send out a different team of scouts. I'll check the binding stone and see what I can read from the fortress and ley lines directly," Nathan ordered.
Nothing happened for several long seconds. Nathan sighed.
"We need to confirm if the scout report is correct. If it is, then I know what is happening and can take the appropriate countermeasures," Nathan explained, looking each of his analysts in the eye one by one. "If it's wrong, then we can all get some sleep and laugh this off as a false alarm. Understood?"
"Yes, sir," the analysts said in unison.
While the analysts got back to work and several left the room to contact others in the fortress, Nathan turned inward. Lurking beneath the surface of Nathan's mind was a gargantuan presence. It seemed to grow in size as he turned his attention to it, threatening to consume his mind. With long practice, he dove into it, mentally, that is. What had appeared to be a singular, all-consuming entity revealed itself to be a sprawling mass of mental nodes and magical links. Nathan followed a mental tether to the closest node. This was the binding stone of this fortress. Nobody knew who created the binding stones. They littered the world of Domar like discarded relics of an ancient race, but even the oldest records of the first peoples stated that they were here before them. What Nathan knew was that bastions trained themselves to control binding stones, and through them, they controlled the world around themselves. Through the fortress's binding stone, he sensed the world around the binding stone in impossible detail. The temperature of the earth, the heartbeats of every person inside the fortress, the flow of magical energy through the ley lines connected to the binding stone. Time passed at a fraction of a rate it did normally. Nathan watched Kiana blink in slow motion. Her brow was furrowed, her worried expression cute, despite the circumstances. She still held on to his arm. He couldn't feel her grip. That was the price of focusing his senses through the binding stone. He lost access to his body's senses for the duration. Fortunately, he normally only used the binding stone for brief periods, and the time dilation effect prevented him from coming to harm or missing anything important. Nathan pulled away from the fortress's binding stone and the web of ley lines and other binding stones under his control. Only seconds had passed in the world around him. He looked around.
"Nathan?" Kiana asked quietly. He ruffled her hair, his hands tickling her pointed horse ears. She gave him a flat look. While Nathan liked playing with the hair of his champions, and especially tickling the animal ears of the beastkin, many of them expressed a preference for him not to ruffle their hair. Naturally, he did it anyway.
"I can't sense anything through the binding stone," he said. "But I expected that. There's something off about it."
"Off?" she asked.
"Do you ever get that feeling of too normal?" he asked.
"Sometimes. Is that what this is?"
"Probably."
Nathan took a seat. The desk lit up with fancy holographic diagrams, but he ignored it. Only the return of another scouting team could confirm or allay his fears. Kiana stood next to him. Almost an hour later, Yefela entered with two other champions. All three women had a trio of gems inset into their collarbone. These were Nathan's tri-gem champions, his greatest warriors.
"What the hell? All readings are normal? I thought you said there was a problem, Faye,"
one of the new women said. She was Vala, a human champion. Her body was noticeably thicker than the other women, with thighs capable of crushing a man's skull, and plenty of muscle packed in under her uniform.
"Eh? But I..."
Yefela trailed off when she saw Nathan's expression. The remaining Trigem champion stared at Nathan, her expression darkening. She glanced up at the central monitor, then looked at the busy analysts nearby.
"You think it's a messenger, don't you?" she said.
Nathan scowled as the room froze. Everybody looked at the champion who had just spoken, as if in disbelief at the words that had come out of her mouth.
"I am waiting to confirm the scouting report," Nathan said after several moments.
The last Trigem champion was Narime, a mystic fox from the now uninhabitable Kurai Peninsula, and she was as wise as she was outspoken. Seven voluminous silver foxtails hung behind her slim, buxom frame, and her robe was severely cut to accentuate her figure and reveal her luscious thighs. Narime pointed a finger at Nathan.
"But if it's correct, then there's little else it can be," she said.
"Yes," he admitted.
"Wait, how can we get a messenger when our demonic activity readings are this low?"
Vala asked. She scratched her head, making a mess of her dense brown hair.
"Messengers can interfere with our detection magic," Narime explained. "We've seen it in the past. It's how they conquered Trafom practically overnight."
"A messenger?" an analyst blurted out.
The others exchanged terrified looks, although at least one seemed lost.
What's a messenger?" the confused analyst asked.
He shrunk in on himself when everybody glared at him.
"Don't look at him like that," Nathan admonished his subordinates. "All of you were like him once."
Yefela nodded.
"I remember being like that a little too vividly, back when I first fought a messenger during the fall of the Anfang Empire. They're the generals of the demonic armies. The weakest of them are equal to a Trigem champion. The stronger ones have taken out multiple bastions."
"Multiple weak bastions," Vala corrected. "I don't remember any messenger ever defeating a bastion with three Trigem champions. And Nathan has countless duo-gem and mono-gem champions. We've got this."
The room calmed down at Vala's projection of confidence, but both Yefela and Narime remained reserved. Unlike Vala, who had fought under Nathan all her life, the two of them came from nations that had fallen to messengers. They knew the true power of the demonic threat, even if Nathan had eventually been the one to slay those messengers.
"We can't let our guard down," Nathan said. "Messengers vary in strength too much, and I don't want to lose anyone."
He looked at each of his champions, and they smiled in return.
"If the scouting report confirms my suspicions, we'll ready everything we have."
Another hour passed. Captain Murdus reported in person, carrying handwritten notes from the scouts. He saluted upon entering and focused on Nathan.
Two of the trigems, Vala and Narime, hovered on top of him, while Yafela lingered behind him.
Bastion, I have the second report here, Murdis said. Do you want the summary or the details?
Does it differ at all from the first report?
No.
Then I don't need the report. Nathan sighed. Send your scouts back out to place the live monitoring crystals. We'll need them in place as soon as possible.
Murdis nodded, a grimace crossing his face. He saluted again.
I'll get everybody to work now.
His footsteps echoed in the room after he left. Then silence. Nathan drummed his fingers on the desk. All eyes turned to him. The analysts, Yafela, Kiana, Narime, and Vala.
We have to assume this is a messenger, Nathan said. If the portal is showing signs of physical activation, but all the readings are telling us the opposite, even after calibration and double-checking, that means somebody is tampering with our readings. In the past, that's always been a messenger.
He looked at his trigem champions, who were almost sitting on top of him.
The three of you know our defensive plans. Vala, you have the outer layer of walls. Narime, you take the inner wall and provide support fire and command the summons. Yafela, the inner fortress is yours, as well as the siege weapons and reserve force. Should Vala need to retreat, I won't, so don't waste your breath re-explaining things, Vala said, rolling her eyes. She plopped herself into Nathan's lap. Her dark brown hair blocked his vision for a moment as she cuddled against him. You're always such a worrier. Just let us lovely champions take care of you. One of her hands wandered below his chest and down to his crotch. He held back a gasp. This needed to stop before it went too far, he thought. Enough, Vala, Narime said with a huff at her rival. She leaned in and pulled Vala away from Nathan. The brunette collapsed unceremoniously on the floor with a laugh. Not that Narime let her own opportunity pass. Her lips closed over Nathan's, and her tails closed around him like a fluffy prison.
Although she's not wrong, you should find some time during the battle to prepare for our celebration,
Narime breathed out after the kiss. She winked at Nathan and pressed her breasts up as she pulled away.
You shouldn't tease him so much, Yafela whined.
You don't tease him enough, Vala said. Anyway, let's get down to brass tacks and sort out our battle plan. Make sure to prep the summons for us, Nathan.
The three of them left the monitoring station. Nathan pulled himself together and sighed. Vala's last request was important. He needed to summon as many defenders as possible using his binding stones. Kiana ruffled Nathan's hair while he was distracted, and he glared up at her. There was an army on his doorstep, and only hours to prepare for its arrival. Once he won this battle, he could go back to his normal day-to-day life as the ruler of this fortress, with countless dedicated champions and soldiers, a life spent fighting off the unending waves of demons.
Chapter 2.
A clear image of the demonic portal shimmered on the wall of the command center. Three demonic portals, actually. Nathan had never seen a portal split apart like this. A visual feed of the portals was projected onto the stone wall at the far end of the room. A couple dozen administrative staff monitored terminals powered by the binding stone's magic. Uniformed soldiers stood guard nearby. In the center of the room glowed a three-dimensional projection of the fortress. Innumerable blips of light dotted the hologram and marked life signs. Many gold chevrons moved about within the projection, and these indicated champions. Nathan looked back at the portals. They looked like tears in the fabric of the world itself. Black and white scars that stood dozens of meters high and flickered strangely. Staring at them brought stars to Nathan's eyes and a sharp pain in the back of his head. The pain was muted because Nathan was staring at an image of the portals rather than the real thing. Nathan imagined how painful it must be to be outside. Normally, a projected image only caused mild discomfort. Nathan's growing migraine proved this portal was different. This might even be the worst portal he had encountered in over a decade of fighting demons. Not that he needed any reminding of that fact. Beneath the portal was a heaving, seething mass of demons. Thousands, tens of thousands. Nathan didn't know how many demons there were. The monitoring devices still didn't work, so he couldn't get an accurate estimate. His scout's estimate had been so enormous that Nathan had refused to share it with anybody else. The wasteland surrounding the portal was vast and ringed by steep cliffs. Demons covered every inch of the bare volcanic rock, and every single one of them pushed their way forward toward the valley that led to the fortress. Explosions rippled through the mass of monsters occasionally. They were the work of long-range siege weapons that took out entire formations in conventional battles. Here they appeared completely ineffectual. By the time the dust cleared, the demons had already filled the gap created by the dead. An endless tide of animalistic demons poured forth from the portals. Fortunately, the monitoring crystals didn't capture sound. Nathan knew from experience how awful the sounds were, how terrifying it would be to be a champion on the front line. Vala. The visual feed cut out. The fortress shook, and dust fell from the ceiling. Screams rung out. Hands grabbed at Nathan's arms. Nathan! Kiana shouted. We're fine, Nathan said, shaking her off. The other hand didn't let go.
Ifrit! Ifrit says we should retreat, a young woman said.
She didn't have any gems inset into her collarbone, but she emanated magical power. One hand clasped Nathan's arm, and the other wrapped itself tight around her stomach. Nathan frowned, feeling troubled by the words. We'll be fine, Sen. I have you here. He ruffled her white hair. Despite looking just shy of 20, she was the same age, if not older, than Nathan. In exchange for her immense magical power, she had stopped aging.
But, okay, Nathan, Sen said.
She tried to look brave, but the inner voice of Ifrit was clearly troubling her.
She's right,
another woman said. A single onyx was buried in her upper chest.
This reminds me of when I saw the demons invade Aleik and bring down the Anfeng Empire. The demons appeared to be endless, just like now.
Kiana looked away, her face pained. The Empire was her homeland, and she had fought during the fall of Aleik when the Empire had been destroyed over a decade ago. The fortress shook again, but nobody screamed.
Vala, status report, Nathan asked aloud.
He spoke into a device embedded in the command terminal.
And Cho, this isn't the fall of the Anfeng Empire. None of you need to worry about that.
Don't call me Cho in front of everybody. I'm Sunstorm,
Sunstorm muttered, twisting in place.
Vala,
Nathan repeated, speaking into the communication device again.
Little busy. We're holding the outer wall and...
Every light flickered at once. A bolt of lightning ran through Nathan's veins, and he slumped to his knees. His breath came up short. For a long moment, he couldn't feel his body. His limbs felt like they were made of lead. The fortress rumbled. Echoes of some massive noise blasted through the halls and into the command center. The floor vibrated. Nathan looked up. Kiana, Sunstorm, and Sen surrounded him, saying things he couldn't hear. His hearing was shot. Their arms reached for him, but he couldn't feel their touch. A gargantuan magical attack had hit the fortress hard, harder than he had imagined possible. He had gone toe to toe with messengers before. He knew the depths of their strength and how hard they could strike his defenses. Nothing had ever hit him like this. It felt as if his opponent had somehow struck his mind and body directly, ignoring the countless layers of stone and magical barriers between him and any attacker. Nathan dove into the mental world of his binding stone. He saw cracks spreading from within it, and many of the tethers he had to other binding stones had been severed. Hurriedly, he repaired what connections he could and slapped together some hasty mental fortifications. For several long moments, he stared at a part of his mental world he had built but never thought he would use. Years ago, he had devised a secret weapon. It had only one purpose and was to be used in only one scenario. The worst possible scenario. He activated the weapon, but kept it separate from the rest of his mental world. That weakened it, but he was concerned about another possibility. This messenger might be able to attack him through the binding stones. He came back to reality to find his champions pulling him to his feet.
"Nathan!" Kiana shouted in his ear. "We need to get you to a healer!"
"Stop," Nathan growled. "I'm fine, just a little shaken." They gave him an odd look. Before one of them could say anything, somebody shouted,
"I just got my connection back! We've lost the outer wall! And the inner wall? This can't be right," the man said.
Nathan stared at the chaos surrounding him. Most of the terminals in the command center had gone down. They were slowly lighting back up, but the results were bad. Communications were still down. The command terminal wasn't working, and Nathan couldn't rely on the holographic projection to monitor the battle. There was another way. Nathan reached out for his champions through the binding stone. A wave of relief washed over him as he sensed those who were alive. Then guilt. Vala and Narime were alive, but most of his champions weren't. He should value all of them equally, he felt. How many had already fallen? "Vala and Narime are still up," he said. "Yefela will lead her reinforcements to pull them back. The fortress itself is the most heavily warded defensive line. I always intended the walls as an extra layer of defense." As if to punctuate his point in the worst possible way, the fortress shook again, and the terminals winked out. Silence fell. Nathan closed his eyes. He should go out there and fight. Years ago, he would have done exactly that. But things were different now. A bastion held all the power of the binding stones and granted power to his champions. At his best, Nathan's skills as a spellblade allowed him to match a duogem champion, albeit with significant help from his binding stone. But he had 3 trigem champions, and each of them was worth 10 Nathans. The power differential between the grades of champion was massive. And this messenger was so obscenely powerful that he struggled to imagine her raw strength. If Nathan died, all of his champions lost their power, and the fortress's defenses failed instantly. So Nathan could only watch, give orders, and strengthen the defenses of the fortress using the binding stone.
"Sen, Sunstorm, I need you to go help Yefela," Nathan ordered.
"But,"
Sunstorm tried to object.
"No buts. She's going to need every champion I can spare to help her. I don't need 3 of my most capable champions protecting me," he said.
The 2 looked at Nathan, then at Kiana. The unicorn beastkin stared at Nathan, as if daring him to order her away, too. He didn't. He knew well enough that she'd refuse to leave him. With several glances backward, Sen and Sunstorm left the command center. Soldiers, sorcerers, and administrative staff shouted over each other and ran around in their wake. The 2 champions gave Nathan a last wave from the doorway. He smiled at them and gave them a salute. They smiled back and vanished from his sight. His heart felt empty. How many champions had he failed to say goodbye to today? The fortress rumbled. The terminals hadn't come back to life since the last tremor. Nathan felt his defenses fail, one after another. His champions were fighting as hard as they could. Vala, Narime, and Yefela were all still alive. What did he have left to throw at the demons? What was his next step?
He was about to dive back into his binding stone to buy time to think when the room rumbled violently. The stonework visibly shook. An explosion rumbled in the distance. Fire and lightning ran through his veins as that attack from earlier struck once more. He realized that the messenger was attacking the fortress this time.
"Get down!" Kiana shouted.
She pulled Nathan beneath her. Dust billowed from the ceiling. Stone plummeted down in whole blocks. Screams and shouts. Nathan grabbed every ounce of magical energy he had and tried to project a defensive barrier. All vanished into blackness. Nathan awoke seconds later. Or maybe it was hours. Everything was dark, but there was something warm on his body. Pain consumed his left arm. He felt like he hadn't slept in a week after doing 10 rounds with Vala. The castle hadn't crushed him to death. He created a wisp of light and saw that the rubble was being held above him by a glowing barrier, but only by a fraction of a meter. Something glittered and caught his eyes. He turned. Then he looked away, his breath caught in his throat. Kiana hadn't made it. Channeling his binding stone, Nathan vaporized the rubble above him. It took several blasts to create a tunnel large enough, and he used yet more magic to keep it stable as he crawled out. The entire fortress must have fallen on him. Had the messenger brought the whole thing down? How was his binding stone still active? He dove into the binding stone, and his mind turned to horror. His mental world was a ruin. Almost every tether was destroyed. He remained connected to this binding stone, but the tethers to the others had been severed. Nathan was now reliant entirely on this individual binding stone and the ley lines directly connected to it. But he still had his secret weapon. It had fully activated itself now and was burning with magical energy. Pulling away from the ruins of his mental world, Nathan instead faced the ruins of the real world. The fortress had been flattened. Dark stone rubble was strewn as far as the eye could see. A few stray walls remained standing. Dusk had arrived, and the purple rays of twilight peeked over the horizon. Nathan wanted to believe this wasn't real. He reached out magically to check on his champions. He found only emptiness. They were all gone. Kiana, Sen, Cho, Yefela, Vala, Narime, and countless others. A gargantuan double-door gate stood in the middle of the ruins, seemingly untouched. It was barred shut and covered in runes. The locking bars shimmered with crystals, and the entire structure exuded an awe-inspiring power. This gate separated the demonic portal from the actual world, and so long as it remained closed, the demons couldn't get in. In front of the gate was a young woman. No, not a woman. A messenger. The 4 curly horns protruding from her skull gave her away, as did the demonic power roiling off her. She was petite, barely 5 feet, and scantily clad. Nathan could generously describe her as showing a lot of skin, but it was more like she was wearing underwear with some translucent silk cloth attached to it. Platinum hoops and bangles hung on her thighs, hips, and arms, and each gleamed with an otherworldly magic. Her trim black hair was cut to her jawline, and her skin was bronzed. Despite the situation, Nathan found his eyes drawn to her curves. He blamed her lack of clothing. She lacked much in the upper body department, but her flared hips and plump thighs more than made up for it. The messenger turned to face Nathan, and he saw that she had violet eyes with red pupils. She raised an eyebrow at him. "So you are still alive," she said. "That explains why this gate won't open. You're a tougher nut than I expected. When your outer wall went down to my first attack,
I thought this was another wasted world. But you somehow survived. And now you've survived an entire fortress falling on your head. Well done. Clap, clap, clap. She clapped her hands at the end for an extra patronizing effect.
I still control the Binding Stone, despite your best efforts, Nathan growled out. And I know a trick or two.
Like regeneration, I suppose. She stared at his left arm. I always find watching flesh regrow itself fascinating. Sadly, I don't really have the time. You've been more entertaining than expected, but I need you to open this gate so that my demonic armies can spill forth from the portal. You've made me think there may be something worthwhile in this world, and I'm rather impatient.
He stared at the messenger. Was she serious? Did she think he was going to open the gate for her? He had devised this last-ditch security measure explicitly to cut off the portal if the fortress ever fell. It would buy time for Falmir to raise an army and defend itself. Then he met her eyes and realized the truth. She was patronizing him. He smirked. You think killing me will open the gate and undo my defenses? You're wrong. The spell operates independently. The battle was over the moment you triggered it. It'll buy enough time for the other bastions to raise their armies and gather champions to suppress you and your portal. Assuming you can even keep a portal this large open for that long.
You set this up to operate even after death? She asked.
She sounded impressed. Her eyes ran over the gate again.
Huh. Quite the dead man's switch. Well, no matter. I can wait.
What?
I said, I can wait. Did you not hear me? Did the fortress falling on your head perhaps damage your hearing?
She smirked at him.
You think a combined army will be enough to stop me, but that's not how this works. The other bastions will come to me, saving me time and effort, and I'll get what I want so much sooner. It's rather funny how you've done my work for me. All I have to do is sit back and wait.
Nathan stared at her as she stretched her arms out and yawned theatrically. This messenger was so confident in her power that she thought she could defeat the combined might of the remaining bastions of Falmir? Then again, she had effortlessly crushed him. Could she pull it off? He swallowed, then dove into his binding stone and did something he had never thought he would ever do. Something he had sworn to never do. The messenger froze. Her eyes met Nathan's the moment his mind returned to reality.
Did you seriously just...
She trailed off and licked her lips nervously. Her dismissive manner from earlier disappeared. She took a step forward, her eyes focused entirely on his.
You did, didn't you?
How did she know what he did? It's impossible for somebody to sense what another bastion is doing in their mental world. She should be clueless as to what he had done.
But she wasn't.
What are you? He asked.
Ah, finally, somebody asks the right question.
The messenger grinned.
I am known as Sister Kadria, but just call me Kadria. You know me as a messenger, but I am much more.
But you're not going to answer my question, are you?
You wouldn't believe me if I did. I learned long ago to place little faith in humans. Your minds are rather fragile, and you're good at denying reality when it doesn't fit your preconceived notions. But you can tell that I am no mere messenger, can't you? That's why you're so troubled, hmm?
She took another step forward. It doesn't matter. None of this does. If you know what I've done, then you know what comes next, Nathan said.
I know what comes next. Do you, little human?
The binding stone detonates. A chain reaction ripples through the ley lines. The explosion will turn everything in a 100-mile radius into an uninhabitable wasteland. No plants will grow here. No sorcery or magic will ever be usable here. Everything and everyone will die.
Nathan swallowed and closed his eyes for a moment. None of that mattered, given the people he cared about were already gone. He reopened his eyes.
More importantly, the portal will collapse. Without magic, and without the binding stone or ley lines, no demonic portals can be sustained here. Your army will vanish. Everything you've done will be invalidated. This is the end, Nathan said. He made to dive into the binding stone again.
Wait, Kadria shouted. Do you really think that's it?
Is this where you try to convince me not to do it? Nathan sneered. Don't bother.
Oh no, feel free to blow yourself up after I speak. But understand, you cannot stop me with this. No magic or technique born from a binding stone can kill me. You will buy time. Losing my army and this portal will hurt. I am impatient, so I can't say I'll be happy with the result. But the end? She laughed. Hardly.
He stared. You're bluffing.
Maybe. But I can tell you that the next part isn't a bluff. You have two choices. Die or accept my offer.
For a moment, Nathan wanted to ignore her and finish detonating the binding stone. Her arrogant attitude grated on his nerves. He forced himself to listen to her. He had nothing to lose. Even if she killed him here and now, the binding stone would detonate by itself within minutes.
What offer? You want to save this world, don't you? Well, maybe not this world, she said, waving a hand at the ruins surrounding them. But the world you grew up in, filled with so much hope, greenery, friends and lovers. I imagine that's why you're a bastion. You're trying to stop the demons and messengers from ending everything, yes? But here we are, in the ruins of your life. The ruins of this world, even.
Are you done?
Listen for a minute, will you? I'm selling you on this, Kadria said, glaring at him.
Your sales pitch is kind of shit.
She ignored him.
What if you could save that world, go back to before everything had fallen apart, and stop the world from falling apart? A second chance at life, but with all of your current knowledge and ability. Would you take it?
Silence reigned. Nathan didn't breathe. Couldn't. He stared into space as he tried to comprehend her words. Everything faded into nothingness around him as he fell into fantasy.
Are you saying you can send me back in time? Messengers are capable of that? He asked.
If we make a deal, then I can send you back to the world you so desire to save, instead of this ruin.
Why me? And why offer such a deal if you can destroy the world so easily?
Because I don't want to destroy the world. Our objectives aren't too dissimilar. Neither of us wants this world. You want to save and live in a world that hasn't been despoiled by horrible demonic armies. Would you believe that I want the same?
Kadria raised an eyebrow at him. He looked around at the ruined fortress.
No. I said you wouldn't believe me.
Nathan frowned. Her statement irritated him because it was true. If what she was offering was possible, did he have a choice? A chance to save everybody who had already been killed by the demonic hordes was something he had only dreamed of. And if she was lying,
then he could detonate the binding stone regardless. There was nothing to lose.
Fine, but why me? He asked again.
Because you're the first Bastion I've met who's been able to bypass the protections of the binding stone like this. They're not supposed to explode, you know. If they could, then the world would be in too much danger to let any random human manipulate them. So that makes you my best candidate for what I want to do.
Anything else? She asked.
Anfeng, he said. I want to go to Anfeng, not Falmir, if you can actually send me back.
She tilted her head to one side and held a finger against her bottom lip. Slowly, a grin crept across her face.
Ah, I see your game. The Anfeng Empire, the first great nation to fall, and the beginning of the end. You think you can stop it from collapsing, and thereby stop the demonic hordes from ever taking hold? Amusing. I know exactly the time and place to send you, then.
Kadria rushed forward. Ignoring his instincts, Nathan remained still. Every part of his body told him that he was about to die. The power oozing off her terrified him. His very essence screamed that she was vile and he was making a mistake. Her hand grasped his, and he felt something reach into his mind. He gasped. That feeling vanished in an instant.
I just needed the connection, she muttered. But you are cuter than I thought. All that dust and blood does you no favors.
Nathan looked away. His eyes fell on a half-broken statue of the Watcher Olmria. He averted his gaze. Did he have any right to gaze upon the figure of the goddess when he had now become a heretic? He was consorting with a messenger. He could still detonate the binding stone. It would only take a moment.
And done, Kadria said. See you on the other side.
Nathan opened his mouth to say something. No sound came out, and he realized he couldn't hear anything. White light crept over the edges of his vision. Kadria vanished a moment later, leaving him to stare into an endless white void. Then all thought stopped. Nathan Martell ceased to exist. Chapter 3. Dappled sunlight filtered through the dense canopy of leaves high above. Birds chirped and tweeted as they flitted from branch to branch. The bubbling of a brook could be heard in the distance, although it couldn't be seen. It was a calm day in the middle of spring. A carriage trundled down a bare dirt road through the forest. No horses drew the carriage, and it seemed to propel itself through some form of invisible power. The carriage was fully enclosed, and the windows couldn't be seen through from the outside. The exterior was painted black, with faded and cracked silver trims and regalia. Nathan opened his eyes and found himself staring out from within this carriage. He spent several seconds staring out the one-way windows, taking in the sight of an undisturbed and peaceful forest. Only the trundling of the carriage broke the peace. He started, leaping high enough to hit his head on the roof of the carriage. Cursing, he sat back down. His hands ran across his body. He no longer felt any pain, and his wounds were gone. Not from healing, but as if they had never happened. He was no longer covered in dust and grime from the collapsed fortress. Blood no longer caked his face, arms, and hands. He froze. His uniform was black. Had it worked? Had that Kadria woman been telling the truth? Nathan examined his uniform thoroughly. He was wearing a black and silver officer's uniform, with the regalia fitting of a bastion. This was the uniform of a bastion of the Anfeng Empire. Officially, their colors were black and gold, but the Empire considered the color gold a symbol of the royal family. As such, the military wore silver as a sign of subservience to the Emperor and the Archdukes.
The carriage showed signs of belonging to the Empire as well, and Nathan had a duffel bag of belongings that did little to dispel the illusion that he had gone back in time. If this was fake, then Kadria was a master illusionist. Nathan swallowed and leaned back against the worn seats. Almost a minute passed as he let his thoughts wander. He had failed. His fortress had fallen. Everybody he had loved had died. Everything he had accomplished had been for nothing. Had he truly been given a second chance? A chance to prevent everything from going wrong? He sat bolt upright. Would he have the chance to find them all again? Yefela, Vala, Narime, and the others? More than anything else, they were the driving force in his life these days. If he had gone back to the time of the Anfeng Empire, they'd be much younger. So would he, in fact. He'd been a teenager when the Empire had been invaded by its neighbors, and all-out war had broken out across Domar. A teenager apprenticing as a bastion, thrust into a war that nobody really understood. Something shined from within the bag. His bag, he remembered. Things didn't feel right, but he needed to remember that this was now his life. He must have a past in the Anfeng Empire, and a family here. How else could he be a bastion in the Empire? Reaching down into the bag, Nathan found a small hand mirror. Was he so vain in this life? Small jewels decorated the outside of the mirror. On the back was an inscription, a family motto, signed with what he somehow knew was his mother's name. The mirror was a gift from his mother, he realized. No, a way to remember her. He wasn't vain. It was simply a way to remember lost family. Nathan grimaced at the thoughtless way he'd insulted the person whose body he'd inherited. Somebody moved in the mirror. Nathan looked closer and realized it was himself. But that was impossible. After all, that somebody looked far too much like Nathan did before he had come back. Shouldn't he be much younger? Nathan blinked. He carefully analyzed his features and checked his hands. Despite his assumption, he looked almost identical to his old self. When Kadria had sent him back, he had somehow thought that meant he would become young again. Stupid. She said nothing about that. He was still in his 30s, but sent back in time. After putting the mirror back in the bag, Nathan took the time to think. Actually think. Since arriving in this time, he had been making assumptions and jumping at everything. He needed to stop for a few minutes and assess everything he knew, and everything he didn't know. He had a rough idea of where he was, but not when he was. Exactly how many years in the past had Kadria sent him back? If the Anfeng Empire was still intact, that meant that all-out war hadn't broken out. In Nathan's youth, the world had been relatively peaceful. Nations still bickered, wars were still fought, but the network of bastions kept the demons in check, and there were no massive invasions by demonic hordes. No messengers capable of defeating several Trigem champions effortlessly. In fact, Trigem champions were so rare that they were considered legends, known by name across the entire world. All of that changed when the Empire started a war with its northern neighbor, the religious order of Trafom, known by most as Trafom. While the Empire's armies were busy in the north, another nation had invaded from the east. The Empire began to collapse, its bastions falling, and the resulting loss of protection allowed hordes of demons to escape into the world. The Empire's capital of Alaik fell, and a messenger tore apart most of its lands. It took years to vanquish the messenger, by which point more bastions had fallen and more demonic hordes had taken root. War had become normalized, and the collapse of the world began. Falmir had been the last nation standing by the time Kadria attacked Nathan's fortress in the far reaches. Every other country had fallen to the messengers, and their lands left to rot in the hands of the demons. Kadria had been right to say that Nathan didn't truly want to save that future. But back in the past,
Before the Empire had fallen? There was so much opportunity here. All of Nathan's friends and lovers were still alive, and he had a chance to avoid some of his past mistakes. Nathan's biggest problem was that he didn't know exactly when or where he had been sent back to. He was a bastion, so he could claim a binding stone and use that to gain more power and champions. But if he was in the wrong place, then he couldn't stop everything from going wrong. He didn't know where this carriage was taking him, either. Was there even a binding stone nearby? Although he had remembered his mother in this timeline, he found it difficult to remember other things. There was no sign of Kadria. She had said she would see him on this side, so where was she? Somehow, he knew that he had unleashed a true monster into the past. Perhaps he should have let himself die and trapped her in the future. If she needed a talented bastion in order to travel back in time, then did he do the wrong thing to allow her to travel back with him? He shook the thoughts off. This was his chance to fix things. He would deal with Kadria when he found her. Absently, he reached into his mind to see if he could feel a binding stone. As expected, the connection wasn't present. There was no overwhelming presence of something ancient and overwhelming, threatening to consume his very essence. But there was an odd feeling he hadn't felt before, like he was tethered to something he couldn't see or feel. Whatever it was, it never became more than a strange feeling in the back of his mind. Nathan knew something or somebody was tied to him in his mental world, but he couldn't see who or how. Was this Kadria's work? Or a lingering after effect of losing access to his binding stones? The carriage slowed, pulling Nathan from his thoughts. He put everything back in the duffel bag and closed it. When the carriage stopped, he opened the door and stepped out into the ancient ruins of a fortress. Lichen and moss grew over mountains of limestone. The ruins were thick with grass and trees. The remains of a keep, maybe 3 stories tall, stuck out like a sore thumb in the rubble. Nathan saw the worn-out interior of the keep in places where the walls had fallen away. He knew this place. Almost any student of history did.
Oh, are you Nathan Straub? Sorry, I mean Bastion Nathan Straub. Sir,
a youthful voice chirped. It sounded familiar to Nathan, but he initially wasn't sure why. He turned to face the speaker. A young beastkin girl wearing black painted armor, with a scimitar at her side. Her black cat ears twitched constantly as Nathan watched, and she scratched her cheek. She had a massive bushy tail, which swished back and forth faster with each passing second, kicking up dust from the ground. Her legs twisted back and forth. She placed her arms over her chest nervously, hiding her hefty bust from view. But she couldn't hide the rest of her generous curves, particularly in her tailored uniform.
Am I right? You're wearing the uniform of a bastion?
A much younger Yefela asked slowly, looking at Nathan through upturned eyes. He continued staring at her. When had Yefela been this cute? Nathan blinked. Wait, Straub? Something clicked in his memory, without Nathan even thinking about it. His surname wasn't Martell in this timeline. It was Straub. He had inherited the surname of an imperial noble, as well as the body of one. I am, Nathan said. He paused despite himself. He'd naturally spoken in Imperial, the native tongue of the Empire, rather than his birth language. Was this another effect of whatever Kadria had done to send him back, just like these memories of his new life that were rising within his mind? He shook the discomfort off. You're Yefela?
Hey, you know who I am?
The beastkin's tail and ears shot bolt upright before flattening.
Sorry. I mean, yes, I am. Champion in training Yefela, reporting for duty, Bastion.
It took considerable effort for Nathan not to stare at Yefela in shock. She had never been so cute and nervous before. He felt that he was seeing an exotic animal that must be cherished and protected. a side of his lover that she had never spoken to him about, and that he had never seen. Euphala had been the fourth Tri-Gem champion to join Nathan's service, although he had known her from earlier in his career. By the time he met her, she was a hardened veteran from years of fighting demonic hordes. She had survived the fall of the Empire, the roving bands of demons in the aftermath, the invading armies of greedy neighbors, and much, much more. He remembered his first meeting with her vividly. She had been a Monogem champion serving a bastion from Trafome. Nathan had been a relatively new bastion. He was popular in Falmir due to a heroic victory against a demonic horde, despite the odds being stacked against him. They had met in a field of demonic corpses, and Euphala had dismissed him with a glance. The nervous looks she gave him right now were a far cry from dismissive. She pressed her fingers together and licked her lips as her tail beat up a storm behind her. "Champion Euphala," Nathan corrected. "You're no longer in training as of now. Walk with me." Euphala half squeaked, half screamed in delight at the news that she had finally been promoted to a full champion and bounced behind Nathan. He ignored her for a moment, letting her burn off her nervous energy. Hopefully, she'd be a little calmer once she settled down and got to know him. But a niggling thought ate at the back of his mind. Would any of his women be the same as they were in his timeline? Could they be the same, given he planned to change the course of history? He suppressed the thought and looked at the ruins around him. Striding toward the remains of the keep, he recalled what this place was. Garrick Pass, one of only two major land routes connecting the Anfeng Empire with its eastern neighbors through the Garrick Mountains. It was through this fortress that the Empire had been attacked from behind. This ruined fortress indirectly caused the end of the world. No wonder Kadria had said she knew exactly the place to send him. She had held up her end of the bargain so far. If Nathan could protect this pass, he could stop the collapse of the Empire. Nathan felt the slight pull of a binding stone from beneath the keep. With a wave of his hand, he told Euphala to follow him and entered the ruins. Garrick Pass had been abandoned centuries old, but with the binding stone's power, Nathan could rebuild the fortress practically overnight. That made finding it his highest priority. There might be a slight complication, however. "Lady Von Clare wanted you to visit her once you arrived," Euphala said. "She said she would organize everything you needed. Do you know her?" Consulting his implanted memories, Nathan decided he didn't. He'd never even heard the name in his life. "I don't, but it's normal for bastions to work with the ruling nobles," he replied, taking a stab in the dark regarding Lady Von Clare's status. "Although we serve as soldiers of the Emperor and are part of the Imperial Army, bastions spend most of their time keeping the peace. It's a lot easier for us to do our jobs if we work with the nobles."
"Oh."
Euphala fell silent for a little while. The pair stepped over rubble and stagnant pools of water. One of the staircases down was flooded, presumably blocked, so Nathan looked for another way down.
"So what sort of things will she do for us?" she asked suddenly.
Nathan smiled wryly. "It's more accurate to say what she'll ask us to do for her."
"Eh?"
The next staircase was too dark to see down, as there were no cracks in the roof for sunlight to stream through. Nathan summoned a ball of light with a snap of his fingers. The beastkin stared at the hazy glowing ball in wonder. "Like I said, we keep the peace. The ruling noble of the region does the same, so she'll try to offload her duties onto us. She'll grease some wheels and help us run the fortress and feed ourselves. But we don't need most of what she can provide. Once the binding stone is operational, I can use its magic to build the fortress myself, and summons make better soldiers than humans for the most part." Nathan gave Euphala a nod. "And I have you, my champion. With a boost from the binding stone, you can probably defeat Lady Von Clare's army single-handedly." Wide green eyes stared back at him.
He looked away before her adorableness mesmerized him.
"So why is that message so important?" Euphala said. She seemed to think it would be the first thing you'd do.
Ignoring her for a moment, Nathan stared down the dark, damp tunnels. Centuries of rain had caused water to seep through from above, but there had been no signs of recent rain. The flooded tunnel from earlier must be above them, and the water slowly seeped through the earth and stone. Once he activated the binding stone, his next steps would be to clear out the underground and make this place safe. He worried that it might fall in on him at any moment. A dim light emanated from a room at the end of the current corridor. He made his way toward it, and Euphala followed.
"We're about to find out," Nathan said.
"Find out what?"
Nathan stood at the doorway and stared at the glowing monochrome orb in the next room. Although it looked like it sat on a pedestal, he knew better. The orb was fixed in place. If he smashed the moss-covered limestone pedestal beneath it, the orb would hover there, perfectly still. This was a binding stone. Nobody knew what they were made of, where they came from, or what powered them. But the Bastions knew how to control them. The binding stone was roughly half of Nathan's height and perfectly round. It glowed a very dull white, almost gray color. Two bands of black ran across its surface. Those bands were a good sign. Binding stones could be sealed away, made inert. Legend had it that the Watcher Omria sealed away binding stones that were not in use, preventing miscreants from abusing them. Once sealed, only another binding stone's power could break the seal. Nathan didn't control a binding stone, so he couldn't awaken a binding stone. If this one had been sealed, he would have needed assistance.
"Find out if the binding stone was still inert," he explained, answering her question from earlier.
He walked up to the stone. It didn't react to his approach. Euphala remained standing at the doorway, staring wide-eyed at the glowing orb. Her ears flattened against her head.
"Is that safe?" she asked.
"For me, yes. For your average person, also yes. I suspect it's still not active," Nathan mused.
He placed his hand against the binding stone. It still didn't react to him, even when he probed it with